Of its acquisition, Interactive Avenues had grown to about 200 employees with offices in Mumbai, Delhi, and Bangalore in India. While media reports have placed the transaction value at about rupees 350 to 400 crores, Ratish is not going to confirm or deny this number. And as a transaction which involves private entities, we of course respect that privacy, being an entrepreneur myself. But the outcome, nevertheless, has been clearly a good one for the smiling Ratish and his co-founders and investors. The aim of this interview, therefore, is to try and capture some key elements of this successful journey. Okay? So, Ratish, welcome and congratulations first and foremost on the Interpublic deal.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, now the main focus today is going to be on the Interpublic Interactive Avenue story. But, you know, before we jump into that, what you're currently doing, Ad Magnet, the digital ad network company that you currently head, we understand that this was a spin-off from Interactive Avenues in 2008 and is not part of this acquisition by Interpublic. What excited you so much about this ad network business that you chose to become the CEO of the spin-off?
So, we've always wanted to launch an ad network that was part of the overall plan that we had when we launched Interactive Avenues in 2006. We took some time to launch it. We had our own, thesis to kind of delay the launch and so on and so forth. Now, among the five of us, we all had our given, we all had our responsibilities. And, Bombay was the largest office for Interactive Avenues, and Amar was handling that. So it was kind of, only just that he continues to handle the largest piece because that was the bread and butter business that we had. And the way I look at it is maybe I was most it was easier for me to maybe move out because they, Amar was handling Bombay, Anjali was handling Delhi, Shan was handling strategy, Sunil was handling buying, and buying and alliance is an important part of the network. So Sunil and me moved on to start Interactive Avenues, sorry, Ad Magnet from Interactive Avenues. And we let Amar become the CEO because he anyway ran that, and therefore by he was running the largest office in Interactive Avenues, and it's kind of obvious that he should be the next he should take on the agency business.
Okay.
So,
Now, you know, sorry, go ahead, Pratish.
Yeah, and also maybe what kind of excited me to kind of start this is that it was maybe slightly it was A, one, it was different from the agency business because now you're on the other side of the table. You're more like a publisher, but with this fair amount of technology kind of thrown in. And two, it was something new, so it was like the hunger of going back to bootstrapping and starting off a new venture was more exciting than kind of running an existing venture.
Okay, now I'm going to rewind.
Yeah.
So we're going to rewind all the way back to your education.
Sure.
And from what we understand, you had a fascination for advertising right from your school days, but your very middle class, parents said, get a real job,
Well,
and you
it
therefore
wasn't.
first became a mechanical engineer. Is that right?
It wasn't exactly my parents. My parents have been more or less supportive of what I've done. It's more like, people at large around you. I mean, my uncles, my friends, my peers said, "No, you must be joking. You want to do English honors? You want to get a job? So why don't you get a job first and figure out life later?" So he said, "Yeah, I mean, actually, it does make sense because at that time, I'm not saying about that time. You see a lot of people who've done graduation and kind of, and especially coming from a small town, you see a lot of people who've done graduation and kind of floating around." He said, "Okay, let's not take a risk. It's maybe too big a risk to take in life at that point in time." So, effort in engineering and became a mechanical engineer for the world.
You said you came from a small town, So give us
Yeah.
some sense of your background over there.
Oh, okay. I was born and brought up in a place called Raniganj. Raniganj is in West Bengal, and it is known for its coal mines. So I did my schooling from till class 10 from Asansol, a school called St. Patrick's Higher Secondary School, and then my plus 2 from Calcutta. So coming from that, from a small town at that point in time, you're always kind of slightly more wary about what you want to do, and you want to be sure about of what you want to do next. So, getting into something which is more streamlined or more acceptable, like engineering seemed to be the right thing to do at that point in time. I mean, not that
I don't regret
doing engineering. I mean, it was a fantastic time. It was a great time doing it, especially, you know, the kind of guys we had in the mechanical department. We had a great time. So I don't regret at all doing my engineering at the end of the day.
Okay. And then, you know, you did something pretty interesting. You went and joined a public sector undertaking for a person who was interested in advertising. Wasn't that a rather radical departure from your aspirations?
Well, you know, once I got into engineering, kind of, you know, somewhere the advertising piece kind of went off the background. Although I still remember, at that time there used to be this magazine called A&M, okay, which is quite famous for people. I mean, or widely read by people in advertising. So I would read that on and off. And while there was some of the stuff, it was basically was very clear. Okay, you're an engineer now. You better do an engineering job, and that's all there was. To the extent that I still remember when I was in my final year, people said, "I'm fine, I'm applying for an MBA." I said, "You know, managers are born and not made." I said, "Sort of jar I gave to people," and I didn't even appear for an MBA in my final year. And I got through Hindustan Copper, and I joined there. It wasn't too far off from home, and my parents were in Raniganj, and I was in a place called Ghat Shila near Jamshedpur. So I kind of joined that. And mines are not new to me. In fact, wherever I stayed, it was much more dangerous mines, right? Coal mines. Not that I had to go in, but it is, it is fine. And the 2 years, I did learn a lot. But then, you know, after 2 years, it was like, this is a long time. You better get move on from here. It's good for a short stint, but not good for a long period of time.
So then you went and escaped to an MBA in IIM Calcutta.
That's right.
And MBAs from any of the premier IIMs get the pick of the jobs. But you chose to join O&M, of course, a very respected ad agency. And since then, you've been an ad man now for about 18 years. What exactly makes this world of advertising, a lot of people think it's make-believe, what makes it so appealing, exciting to you, Ratish?
See, two things. I mean, the primary thing was, while I had this basic interest, it was waning on and off. It wasn't that, you know, it was a passion driven completely, and I've always thought about it. Now, you know, in my fifth term, we had a course called Advertising Management, which is taken by the late Professor Subrata Sengupta. He's written a book on brand positioning, and he's a fantastic professor, fantastic teacher. I still remember, I think there were about 80 odd kids of us who were registered for the course, and each class of his would have more than that. People who were not registered would land up to attend his lecture. The two-hour lecture, there was no break. You could go out if you want, but the class would go on, and people would not go out. I mean, in other classes, you would try and go out, go somewhere, have a smoke, come back, whatever. Here, people would sit there and kind of go through the entire class. It was fantastic. And that's where I kind of got back to, this is like interesting, you know, the way he put the entire thing forward in front of us. How why do you create an ad? How is an ad made? You know, all that kind of stuff. How are brands made? So it was like really, really interesting. And that kind of got my interest back into advertising, and I said, you know, this is a place I'd love to work with. On the flip side, the other thing also is, A, in advertising, typically you get posted in large cities. B, you don't need to wear a tie. Okay, that's
and three, there are a lot of women. Huh? And three, there were a lot of women.
Yeah, well, women depends on which agency and which city.
Yeah. No, you know, what's very interesting, you know, Ratish, you seem to have always tried to experiment in some fashion or the other. So in May 2000, you were with Euro RSCG, again another big agency, when they decided to spin off a company called MediaTurf as an exclusive digital media services business with venture capital funding. What made you realize, you know, that or transition to such a internet-based venture?
So again, you know, a lot of stuff, maybe experiment or just happened by itself. So I was doing fairly well at Euro, and you know, my boss was happy with me. My boss is Mr. V. Ramani. And you know, I was there for 3 years there, and one fine day I send my resignation to him, saying, you know, Ramani, I'm off. I am quitting. So he was out of the country, he'd come back and he said, listen, what's wrong with you? Why are you quitting? I said, see, you know, everybody's talking about .com these days. I don't know what .com is all about, but, you know, I want to try my hand at the .com thing, you know. I've run advertising for some time, not that I'm an expert, but I'd like to try this new thing. And I've got an offer from a company in the .com space, so I think I'll kind of move on. To which he said, you know, if that's what interests you, we've got a stuff here. We're starting off a new digital initiative, so why don't you join us? I said, what's that all about? Then he told me something. I didn't know what he was talking about in the first time. And I think I've researched a bit about it on the net. And so that sounds exciting. So I said, okay, fair enough, I'm on. And so he made me an offer, and I guess I was the second employee at MediaTurf. And I kind of moved on. Just happened, the way I look at it.
Okay, so you were lucky that your interest coincided with your employer's interest at that point in time.
Yeah.
Then 6 years later, in 2006, you left MediaTurf with three of your colleagues and an ex-colleague, Anjali, you know, who had left MediaTurf earlier. What suddenly gave you the confidence that you could actually be able to work and sustain yourself as an independent team and as an independent agency?
So, couple of things, as in, you know, if you look at the team which came out, so other than our CEO then, the late Mr. Ramani, I was the CEO, Amar was head of Bombay, Anjali used to be head of Delhi, Shantanu was head of strategy, and Sunil was head of buying and alliances. So if you look at very much except the CEO, the rest of the operational team, the top team were kind of, were the five of us who kind of moved out. So A, we ran the business for we contributed to running of the business for a long time. We had fairly decent relationship with the people in the market, with publishers, with clients, with employees themselves, with employees in other companies. And the biggest thing was, you know, a business like this did not need too much of capital, at least for in the beginning. So it was kind of said, you know, end of the day, we said, let's start it. Let's see what happens. Worst case, what will happen? We'll look for a job. That's it, right? And I'm sure what we've done for the last 6-7 years, we'll definitely get a job. So we said, let's take a plunge. I mean, you know, it's never too early or never too late to take a plunge. Let's just take a plunge at this point in time. And the markets were looking good at that point in time. So we said, you know, let's kind of do this. And I think we did well by doing that because we did manage to get a fair amount of business at that point in time.
Did you guys give yourself, you know, an initial time period before you said you would say it's not working, like 1 year, two years, something like that? Or were you very confident right from the word go?
So I think we were fairly confident that we would get business. Having said that, some of the clients who we thought would move with us did not, but some who we thought would not move moved with us. So it kind of evened out. And we didn't give ourselves time. We said, let's just start. We'll take it as it comes. And we launched on the 3rd of April. And on the 5th of April, we launched our first campaign. That was 2 days after we launched the business. So that gave us the confidence to, you know, say, okay, boss, let's just head on and do this. So
now, all of you five, you know, had worked together and you kind of got to know each other, if I understood you right, at RSCG MediaTurf. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you know, John Rockefeller had this famous comment that a friendship founded on business is better than a business founded on friendship. You know, how much would you agree to something like this in the light of your own experience?
So, I mean, what we got along well, the five of us, we got along fairly well in terms of, and our wavelengths were the same in the sense that, you know, I'm not saying we had no differences, but end of the day, when it came to business, one, we were quite open about discussing it amongst ourselves even before we started. It was not that, you know, okay, you know, I'm telling you this and we have to do this. We've always discussed and arrived at a solution. We were not just kind of, you know, friends at work. We would catch up for a drink once in a while. There were times we've kind of caught up with families. So it's kind of gone beyond. I mean, we actually became pretty good friends in that sense, going beyond just work. And we knew each other's strengths and we could kind of hive it off. So in some cases where, you know, I may be lacking, somebody like an Amar or a Sunil would just kind of come on and say, okay, this part, let me handle that. Let me handle this piece. Okay, so we knew each other's weaknesses. We worked together for 6 years, so we knew each other's strengths. We knew each other's weaknesses, and we got along well. So that was kind of, you know, a good thing because you know it therefore became a combination of a business which came out of friendship, but that friendship actually came out of business. So maybe it's kind of somewhere, you know, both the things that they put together were kind of meshed into one.
Great. You know, see, one of the things that seems to strike me is that there was clarity of purpose and there was clarity of communication at all times. That's what you seem to be telling me.
Right. I mean, see, okay. End of the day, as individuals, we may always have our differences, which is possible. Anybody will have their own differences. But those were stuff which did not kind of derail the progress, and there was stuff which is always sorted over a discussion. But we were very clear about what we wanted to do, and therefore all of us had the same vision there. So we when you agreed on the same vision, and you could have some mind difference in the way that it didn't matter, but when your vision is the same, you know, you end up cooperating and doing or driving towards the same vision, and that's what works for us.
Okay, now one of the things that you guys did was apparently to split the equity equally, you know. How easy or difficult was this process of splitting the equity and splitting the roles that you had and choosing, say, the first among equals? Just walk us through some of the thinking that you had over there.
So there were five of us there, and the roles were not much different, right? Amar was head of Bombay. He was head of Bombay here. Anjali was head of Delhi. Before she quit, she was head of Delhi here. Shantanu was head of strategy. He was head of strategy. Sunil was head of buying and alliances, and that's what he did. Okay, I was a CEO there. My O changed to me, and I became a CEO. That's about it. So there was technically not much of change in our roles, so to say, except that, you know, now we didn't have to go over us to talk to somebody and say take permission to do something or get a permission for a particular spend. We were the ones who decided what to do. So in that case, maybe we were more empowered in that sense. And so the role, there was not too much of a role change, A. And, you know, we've been on equal footing in our earlier this thing also. I mean, maybe I was a CEO, whatever else, but, you know, people ran the business the way they were looking. We were quite fluid in the way we ran the business. So kind of, you know, the equity amongst all of us was not actually an issue at all. It was just simple. We decided, okay, fine, this is what we're going to do. And that actually maybe saved a lot of time and effort, which would have maybe otherwise gone in haggling and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, for us, it didn't matter. Day one, we just started, we rolled, we knew this is what was going to happen, and therefore, there was no issue. I mean, so we didn't spend a lot of time in, let's say, wasteful discussions and kind of back and forth on a lot of stuff, which I guess some people might be spending. So in that case, we got on to work very fast. So,
you know, would this be something, you know, Ratish, that you would recommend to other entrepreneurial teams? Would this be something that you would replicate in any other venture you might be starting in the near future or later?
You know, I think it worked, and I think it's a good thing. So, for example, I mean, if there are three people just starting something together, okay, I would think that, you know, it could be good, unless somebody is, of course, bringing in a whole extra amount of money. I mean, if the other two people, let's say all of them are bringing in wet equity, an equal amount of cash, and it should be kind of equal amongst everybody, right? Unless, of course, somebody is going to bring in a whole lot of extra cash, then, of course, you should give them the benefit of that piece. Otherwise, everything being equal, it doesn't matter whether you were junior or senior earlier. I mean, you've come into it together, you've come in as equals, so therefore everything should be equal, is what I think and what all of us thought.
Great. Now, when did you suddenly realize that you needed more money, and you got Shaadi.com founder Anupam Mittal as an angel investor for Interactive Avenues. So right. When did you realize that you needed money, and how did you end up pitching to somebody like him?
So we knew Anupam earlier. In fact, he was a client, and both Amar and me have met him a couple of times. And once we started, you know, we said, yeah, sooner or later we will need some money, because in the advertising piece, you know, there is a need for working capital, right? I mean, a lot of advertisers do not pay on time, and you need to pay the publishers, you need to pay salaries. More important than that, you need to pay salaries in 30 days' time, right, when you started. And money comes in at best, if you're lucky, in 60 days, more or less, more like 75, 90 days kind of stuff. So, of course, we realized that we need to raise some money sooner than later. Not very large amounts, but we need to raise some money. And we thought, you know, a faster thing is maybe to go to an individual or an angel kind of a person rather than go to an organization. And so somebody said, why don't you have a chat with Anupam? I said, fair enough, why don't you fix up a meeting with me? So this person fixed up a meeting. We went down, we met him. He seemed interested He said, yeah, this looks good and I'd like to invest. You tell me what it takes. And then we discussed the term conditions and it worked out. And it worked out very fast. And all in all, a good decision, I think, in terms of the support. And he took a decision extremely fast. So we were happy about it.
So, you know, one of the things that you seem to have done so far, Ratish, from the early part of your entrepreneurial journey, is working with people you knew quite well. You know, you got them as co-founders or in Anupam's case as an investor. Mm-hmm. You think this helped you cut down a lot of, you know, otherwise what the pain that otherwise a lot of entrepreneurs typically go through?
I think so. So to the extent, one, you know, as co-founders, we worked together. So for each of us, we didn't even have to sit and figure out what we were doing. We knew what we were, you know, we knew each other very well. Getting to Anupam wasn't very difficult. We knew him and somebody else introduced him. And luckily for us, he was also interested in the space. Okay. Third thing that maybe worked for us is, you know, good or bad, I mean, good for us at least, is a fair number of employees at MediaTurf were willing to move with us. So, as you said again, people, you know, with people or entities we knew, it was easier. So we had a team of another 25 people who kind of moved with us from MediaTurf. So end of month one, we had 30 people on board across Bombay, Delhi, and Bangalore, and we started all the three offices in the first month itself. And again, you know, to the point, all of them were known to us. So yes, it was definitely easy because, you know, all these entities, all these people, all friends, all of them, we kind of known to us. We knew each other at a personal level, and that kind of really helped.
Yeah, you know, in fact, that was going to be my next question. You know, after the first five of you, how did you really build the business in terms of building the team apart from you five? How do you get the clients? I was going to ask you that question, but you said that virtually everybody migrated from MediaTurf. I don't know if you can ask me, if I can ask you this question, if it's not controversial. I mean, didn't MediaTurf or Euro RSCG object or something?
So Euro was not in the picture at all. I mean, they were investors, I guess, but they were not in the picture. So people just quit, right? And they joined us. So in the US, some of them just told MediaTurf that they're going to join, you know, Interactive Avenues. That's it. I mean, so they just quit and they joined us. We were lucky, I guess. I mean, you know, and I'm really thankful to a whole lot of people who kind of moved in at that point in time, and a lot of them are still around, either here or in Ad Magnet or in Interactive Avenues. And a number of them actually came and said, listen, you know, we know that we just started a couple of months. If you're not able to pay salary, that's fine. We'll manage it. You know, let's get the business rolling. So even the early employees seem to have a kind of, you know, an ownership in the business, and that was kind of really great because the kind of effort they put in to get the business growing, it's not just about us as the co-founders, it's about the founding employees. I'm not saying employees now don't work, they all do it, but the founding employees at that point in time had put in a lot of effort. They actually helped us.
Okay, did you, to get this thing, lubricated, moving along smoothly, did you also think of ESOPs or, you know, stakes for the founding employees as well?
We have ESOPs. We have ESOPs at Interactive Avenues. We have ESOPs at Ad Magnet also, and that's part of the deal. We have that. We've been having that right from the beginning.
Oh, great. And, you know, in the early part, it takes you roughly, typically a business takes roughly 2 to 3 years to kind of break even and chug along in a smooth fashion. How did it pan out for you the early 2 years, you know?
Well, I guess our first break even month was, if I'm not mistaken, month 5 or 6. And by month 15, we cleaned up all our past losses. So Interactive Avenues was completely profitable from month 16 onwards and stuff. So, although of course, Ad Magnet is still to kind of, you know, while we are on an operating profit, we've got past losses to clear up. So Ad Magnet is still there, but on Interactive Avenues, we've been doing that for a long time, and we soon grew to be. Of course, there are no numbers to prove it, but I guess Interactive Avenues is the largest digital agency in the country. And, you know, of course, to be the largest agency, you should be profitable, right? It doesn't make sense to run a business without profitable.
Okay. Now, any key course corrections you had to make in the initial period, changes in the model, changes in the proposition to customers?
Well, not too much, except, you know, as I said earlier, In the first couple of months, let's say the first 6 months, we had a business plan and said these are the clients that are going to move to us. I mean, this seemed easy, right? So coming back to your earlier thing, saying people we know, there were some people we knew very well. We still have a drink with them, whatever else. But unfortunately, the business didn't move for a variety of reasons. So you know, about month three, we said, listen, Mars, we were thinking these guys will move. They're not moved. We need to do stuff. We need to figure out life. Otherwise, you know, he won't get business. On the other hand, suddenly started clients who we didn't even expect to move were kind of calling and saying, why don't you come for a pitch, and or why don't you handle our business, and so on and so forth. So kind of it was offset, but then we had to do that those kind of stuff, right? No, now chase after this client. This kind of not happening, so let's chase after the other. Let's not keep chasing people who seem to be hesitant to move. So those were some bit of stuff that we needed to do. Otherwise, not too many course corrections.
Okay, now if you look at the next stage of your growth, where you suddenly said, I think we are now approaching maybe the takeoff, or you finished takeoff, you're now getting into really growth and an acceleration stage. Your first client was Travel Guru, I understand, Ashwin right. Damera, the CEO. He is the one who introduced you to Sequoia.
That's
and
right.
You know, you decided to not just raise one but three rounds of capital through Sequoia.
Well, it's not exactly.
What made you realize that you needed significant step up in the money? And secondly, you know, as a follow-up question, is what made this relationship with Sequoia so special?
One, it wasn't three. It was actually, you know, I put maybe two or one and a half. Where some money we took it off a deferred kind of stuff. We took some money in the beginning and said, okay, we'll take it later. Of stuff. So it wasn't exactly three rounds in that manner. It is actually just an extended first round, so to say. It wasn't three rounds. So going back to the Sequoia question I think we first met Sandeep and Shailendra from Sequoia, and while we had the money, called our investment from Anupam, and we could have technically run with most of that as far as Interactive Avenues is concerned. We did spend some of the money in ad manage subsequently. But we were fine with money. We didn't need too much of money there. But, you know, what kind of got us to talk to or kind of get Sequoia to invest in us is what we figured out is a name like Sequoia is a good name to have as the backing, right? I mean, if you want to go to some place and you are telling you, okay, what's your pedigree? You're a new company. Just tell them, you know, we invested by Sequoia Capital. I mean, that suddenly the guy kind of looks at you much more seriously than he would have otherwise. Right? I mean, otherwise somebody who didn't know you would just say, okay, this is some Johnny come lately. They started something on their own and they think they can handle my business. Now, on the other hand, you tell them, boss, we're funded by Sequoia Capital. The guy kind of looks at you very seriously. I mean, Sequoia wouldn't be investing in some stupid kind of a business kind of stuff. So A, one, it was something which added to the weight we had the business proposition. Two, they were able to get us a lot. I mean, they were able to open a lot of doors for us. They were able to get us introduced to a variety of companies, which is a part of the portfolio, large companies, where we could have a business relationship with them. So that kind of helped. I mean, having Sequoia on board was really, really helpful. We were introduced to a lot of the U.S. companies, and we did a lot of work with them. And needless to say, you know, we got better terms because you're so-called, you know, same investor kind of investing in us kind of stuff. So all in all, it is a good thing to get Sequoia on board, and they've been very helpful. So now it's no longer Sequoia, right? I mean, now if you know what it's Westbridge actually who's put the money in. It came from the Westbridge fund. So after a split, I mean, it's kind of Westbridge, but both from Sequoia and Westbridge, we've always had great support, completely non-interfering. They let us run the business. They gave their advice, and they said, you know, this is what we think. Now we leave it to you, and they let us run the business. So, you know, as against a lot of stuff I read about where people, I mean, I don't know personally, but where people keep cribbing about, you know, the VC did this and the VC did that, I don't think we've got much to complain.
From your point of view, therefore, your decision to get funded appears to be more strategic than driven by real financial needs. Am I right in saying that?
That's right. Perfectly right.
Okay, and would you say that this is how, in your view, entrepreneurs should really look at fundraising more, not just for the sake of money, but more for driving business objectives?
Yes, and see, you will need money at some point in time, unless you're already capitalized yourself and you're going to you have fair amount of spare cash to kind of run the business. So let's say, you know, again, Anupam was also a person who was interested, and therefore it kind of, and our wavelengths matched, and those things kind of fine. But at that point in time, we definitely needed the money, right? But at the Sequoia's time, I said, well, we might need some money. We didn't need the kind of stuff we took on board, but therefore, in that sense, it's more strategic. So the way I look at it, or the way we look at it is, you know, for us, we are very clear that never take more than what you want or what you need. You know, it's kind of sometimes very comforting, say, you know, let me pick up more money, there's money available in the market. But what we've seen is that if you've got, or our outlook is, if you become too comfortable in business, you might just miss the bus. You might not just worry. So the moment you've got just enough to be, you know, you know, okay, I need to work, you will continue working. Otherwise, you might just, you know, relax and you kind of miss the bus. So we never took more money than we needed. We took money only when we needed. And the way I look at it is, there could be, I mean, of course, it may be different for different businesses, but in our case, there could be a tendency to kind of take more money, splurge and all that. We were very cautious about doing that, and we never did that kind of stuff. So for us, you know, scale, while it's important, profitability was also important. So that's the way we ran the business, and therefore for us, there was no need. We would never take more money than we needed.
Okay, Ratish, one thing I've seen, you know, is that when you take money from an outside investor, whether it's an individual or whether it's an institutional investor, the dynamic in some sense changes, you know, when you have a bunch of people, like you have four other co-founders, where it's a little chummy. And when you have an outside investor, did you feel that the dynamic in terms of reporting, in terms of internal governance changed, you know, because of this external investor?
No, nothing much, except we had to, you know, pay our auditors more, because Sequoia wanted one of the big four to be the auditors, so we had to pay more for the auditors. Other than that, there wasn't too much of a hassle. They came, of course, it is good that they came, so they helped us put together maybe a lot of corporate governance things which we as individuals did not know about. So in that sense, I think it was maybe good that, you know, we had an investor, and then maybe because they did a due diligence, okay, this is missing, and therefore we kind of put all that in place. But did they really change the way we operated or the way we ran our business? They did not. They were kind of more supportive than, being at Loggerheads kind of stuff. So they were very supportive of what we did. So we didn't
have
to
do much. Okay. Now, if you were to look back at the Interactive Avenues, early and later stage, what are the three things you would say that you did, you know, fantastically right, of great, you know, you did a fantastic job?
Well, I don't know about Shiva, two things I can think definitely. One is, at Interactive Avenues, we were always client-focused. So, if a client has a requirement, we work towards that. So we kind of aligned our way of operating with what a client wanted. So therefore, we were in sync, and therefore, we had a lot of clients who were happy with us. So one was client focus. Two is the other thing. What we were always clear is that, you know, advertising is a very, very manpower or people intensive thing, and therefore we need to take care of our people. So the other thing that we did is we tried to the extent possible to take good care of all the people who worked with us, whether they were our founding employees or they came on later. And we had a very, you know, an employee-friendly atmosphere, to the extent that, you know, we used to have, at least we did for the first 5 years, where we used to have an annual outing for the entire company. It did not have a department or whatever else, and some of them were team building exercises and stuff like that for the entire company. So two things that we did right, I think, and we were focused on was client delight and taking care of the people within the company.
And looking back again, you know, what are the couple of things that you might have done very differently if you had a chance to go back?
I don't know. At this point in time, I can't think of too many things that are done differently, maybe. Except if you're going from today's point of view, maybe yes, a far or maybe a larger use of technology in some of the areas, or automation in some of the areas. But other than that, I don't know, not too much. Having said that, you know, you could have rewind back to the early dot-com days, I would have definitely said, you know, let's not do cost per performance kind of deals and then hope people spend on branding, but then that's wishful thinking, that's an industry level thing, and that's not an interactive revenue level thing kind of stuff. So not too much. I mean, I think more or less, I think we did most of it. I mean, luckily for us, we did most of it.
So it looks like you kind of went down the right avenues, you know. And when you went down all these avenues, what made you finally look at the avenue of exit, Ratish? You know, what was the trigger?
A couple of things. See, there was a lot of, maybe, you know, let's put it this way, there was a lot of inbound interest from the large advertising groups. And, you know, although it was happening for quite some time earlier also, that year particularly, I think, around end of 2011, 2013, so early 2012 and 2011 kind of stuff, the inbound interest had reached quite a high. I mean, everybody seemed interested in talking to us, saying, what are your plans and what do you want to do next and so on and so forth. So we said, you know, here are a bunch of guys who seemed interested. Instead of kind of doing one-off thing with somebody else, let's kind of do one, let's do a thing, let's run a process, see what their interest levels are, see what's the kind of valuation that they're willing to pay us for the company, and what are the other terms and conditions, and let's see if there's an exit possible. Because the thing is that, you know, the couple of things. One is when you're part of a larger a group, you know, the chances of your access to a lot of other stuff, to other markets, to knowledge, to all lot of stuff, will be much higher rather than being a standalone in a country like India. So, and here you are not the suitor, they are the guys who are kind of wooing you. So it makes more sense to kind of agree at that point in time. And we thought the time was ripe, right, because we had so many suitors. So we said, let's go ahead and see what happens. So we ran a process. And it took some time, but finally we boiled down. I mean, we kind of, it came down to IPG, and then we signed up with IPG, and they bought us out.
When you said you ran a process, you know, having gone through something similar myself, did you use an external advisor of some sort, you know, where you
felt we had an external advisor, at least to run the process, although most of the decision was taken internally, but to run the process, to get people on the table, to see what should be done, so we had an external advisor to do that.
Okay. And it did help
because, you know, like in some of these cases, I think an investment banker is best suited to run that kind of stuff rather than, the business people themselves, right? So.
No, I have this feeling, you know, many times, you know, if you take a traditional Indian marriage, I'm not saying all Indian marriages are like this, the bride and the groom never discuss dowry, because if it works out, they have to sleep in bed together.
Yeah. So here, well, let's put it this way. The external facilitator was more to bring the bride in front of the groom, or get the so-called swayamvara in place in this case kind of stuff. And then we discussed between ourselves what the terms and conditions and stuff like that. So slightly different from the traditional Indian marriage, so to say that.
No, I know that. So, I mean, can you just walk us through what happened between the co-founders and key employees? You know, what were the dynamics and what were the communication that happened? Because this is tricky sometimes, right?
Right.
So sometimes people think you're running away from the business kind of thing.
No, so, you know, the way it happened is, we had a process where from up front, Ad Magnet was kept separate, price separate. This was only for the agency business, Interactive Avenues. And we actually met the various advertising groups, and we presented to them, and they came back with their offers. We shortlisted some of them, went into a second round. There was due diligence and so on and so forth. They came back with a revised bid. And finally, kind of, we accepted one of them, which is kind of IPG. And at that point in time, once we kind of closed everything and everything was ready, I think so. Ad Magnet, there was nothing much to do except that, because we are a separate company. So Amarant Interactive Avenues had a word with the entire team and said, you know, this is what's happening. In fact, prior to that, he had spoken to all the departmental heads and said, you know, this is what's happening. We're looking at this. We'll keep you guys posted. And this is, and he got back to the team saying, this is what's happening, and this is all we've done. And we signed everything up, but till the money comes to the bank, we don't know what's happening. So, you know, you guys keep it to yourself, and this is what happened. And most guys took it fairly, very, very well. And, you know, even the employees were benefiting because their ESOPs were also technically getting in cash. So, you know, people did make money out of the transaction. So they knew, most people knew what was happening. We were kind of open with most of them and saying, you know, this is what we're doing. This is what's happening. And why are we doing this? And so on and so forth. So people were in it.
Great. And how much was, you know, you had already had an investor for 6 years. Was there any pressure from any external party, you know, to hasten this process of exit?
Not at all. They were perfectly fine. They said, you know, we leave it to you to run the business. You know, we are not in a hurry to exit. We, you know, and if, you know, we agree with your principle that if the valuation is right, then we'll exit. So we never had any pressure. And that, I think, is one of the, you know, few lucky things that we've had. Where we didn't have any pressure. That's right.
Now, having gone through this experience now of building a company, scaling it up, and then an exit process, mm-hmm. what are your key learnings and what advice would you give to others, other entrepreneurs, you know, key lessons?
So, okay. One is, you know, the way we look at it is, you know, have a clear business model in mind. It can't just be an idea and, okay, we'll figure out as we go. So a clear way of how to make revenue. And one of the things that we were very, very particular about is from day one, I mean, you might be a loss-making company or whatever else in day one, but you're kind of very clear that we need to make profits sooner than later, okay? And it should be sooner than later. And therefore, we kind of work towards that. So one of the things that we've done, and I think which I kind of keep telling people is like, put your head down and work, and that's kind of really paid dividends for us, right? I mean, we didn't bother too much about what others were saying, what's happening in the market and all that. We said, okay, this is what we need to do, this is how we'll make money, and therefore let's just go ahead and do that. And as I said earlier, the two things which worked for us, kind of repeating it here maybe, is complete focus on our client needs. So in this case, our clients were the advertisers. So I would pull it for any business. So if somebody is an entrepreneur, a TG, or his clientele is whatever, as long as focus is there for the clientele, it's definitely going to work. And two is you need to take care of your own people, your partners, and so on and so forth. So it's not, you know, you just can't do without a certain part of the ecosystem supporting you. So therefore, one needs to kind of, you know, be completely, you know, or you should, one needs to take care of internal people, your partners, and so on and so forth. Only then will you get to where you're going. In our case, one of the things that I kind of missed out is we had a lot of goodwill, and that's kind of one of the things I thank everybody for, and I think one of the key things for our success. Right? I mean, we had goodwill both from clients, from publishers, from our internal, I mean, the people we recruited. So a lot of goodwill was there, and that's kind of really helped us. You know, I mean, for a fledgling company starting off on day one, you know, we got credit from almost all the publishers and everything. And so that, so I think, you know, once you have a goodwill, when you create a goodwill, it's really going to help you. And that is something we've learned.
So what you're saying, Ratish, is to get something tangible in terms of, say, wealth or money. In your case, a lot of intangibles seem to have contributed to it.
There is definitely. I mean, so it's a mixture of tangible and intangible stuff, right? I mean, you know, everything can't be. So it's not all are not black and white, and neither is it completely gray. It is somewhere in between. So there is a fair amount of nice colors there also. So it's not some dark. Black or white or some gray in between, nice bright colors also, and that's what really works. And you know, and the other thing that you see is as long as you know your partners and your clients and your employees, they're all happy. I think you'll be happy. And that's a key mantra that we keep putting there. You know, your client should be happy. So that's a completely external piece, and your employer should be happy, completely internal. In between, you have various partners. Now you keep all three parties happy. You have to be happy, unless of course you are born sad or something like that. You'll definitely be happy also.
Ratish, in your case, did one of you kind of take the lead in driving this exit process, and How long did this whole process take?
Right. So technically, you know, in the entire exit, Amar and Shantanu are part of the business, and they run that, and they are still running that as per, you know, as an IPG company. So the lead was taken by Amar in this case, and he did most of the stuff for the exit.
Oh, great. So now if you look at the deal, that means you and the other three, don't have to be part of Interactive Avenues anymore. Is that part of the deal?
No. So we're not part of Interactive Avenues. So Sunil and me are out of Interactive Avenues. Anjali runs Reprise. So Shantanu and Amar, who are part of Interactive Avenues, the other three, we're not part of Interactive Avenues.
Okay, now, you know, final reflections before I close this out. Any time, you know, you're a first generation entrepreneur coming from a small town, your father a classic migrant to another place and all that, any time when you felt this entrepreneurship thing was really not worth it, you should have actually stayed put in your old job?
Well, maybe one odd time, maybe once which I wouldn't remember, otherwise most of the time, no.
Well, you're lucky. I said you're lucky.
I guess I'm lucky, and I had complete support. Like, you know, before we started off, I told my parents, you know, I'm doing this. So my dad said, see, you know best. You know this. I don't know what he did and stuff like that. So if you know best and you think it's going to be worth it, do it. My wife said, you know, give it a shot. What's the harm?
It's,
you know,
16 hours.
Things will only go grow better. So I had complete support from family, and as I said, I had support from our partners, our advisors, the employers, and all that. So end of the day, yes. If you ask me, are we lucky? I think we are extremely lucky. Let's put it that way. So, you know, if somebody says it's only hard work, I said no. There is a bit of luck also. Of course, hard work is definitely there. But that small bit of luck can kind of change things one way or the other, and I think we were really lucky, and I kind of thank everybody and thank God for it also. So.
Okay. Now, one thing which happens to an entrepreneur, you know, it's not just as the old saw goes, you know, there's not just a career change, but it's a lifestyle change, and a lot of things change, work-life balance and all changes. Did it happen to you, and how did it kind of affect you?
Well,
how did you manage it?
Yeah, maybe the early days, maybe the first couple of years, maybe yes, to some extent. But earlier also, you know, given that advertising overall is such a, you know, the way the industry works, and you work late and all that kind of stuff happens. So maybe may not be too much, but it definitely did make a difference in the early days, where, you know, you were working Saturdays, sometimes Sundays. You did a lot of work which you never did in the earlier stuff. You know, like, for example, somebody would sit and go through, you know, various, when we moved to an office, so one of us would sit and go through the plans and say, you know, okay, this is where the cabin should be, this is where people should sit. We could have never bothered about all that in our earlier job. Yeah, they, somebody else would take care of all that. So maybe there was, in the early couple of days, there was a bit of maybe stress in the family, in the sense that you did not get to spend as much time with the family and so on and so forth. But that kind of increasingly became lesser by year 3 and 4. You kind of normalized your lifestyle and then kind of got back into, you know, a much more normal lifestyle in the first couple of years. And yeah, the first couple of years may have been slightly off balance in terms of, you know, not being able to give as much to the family. But subsequently, you know, you did manage to kind of balance it out.
Good. And now, Ratish, you know, now that you've got out of Interactive Avenues completely, what's next apart from Ad Magnet, which you're running? Any other plans that you have? Any, now that you have money, I'm sure that a lot of people will be interested in knowing you, like how you got to know Anupam Mittal. Any plans of making your own angel investment?
Yeah, so as of now, we are completely focused on growing Ad Magnet, and that's the complete focus at this point in time, to take Ad Magnet to figure out what is next for Ad Magnet. The ad network is not a easy space to be in at this point in time. So therefore, what next? What do we do, and what's our way forward? So that is very key. As far as becoming an angel or whatever else, haven't bothered to think about it. But right now, we kind of focus purely on taking Ad Magnet to the next level and see how we can make this a much larger business than what we are today.
So you know, like your family, your wife and all are happy that you're again starting something new, or are they looking at you with great trepidation?
No, I mean, it's fine, right? AdMind's been there for now, what, almost 5 years, right? 4.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same, so it's fine. And you know, I'm like, again, as I said, we're luckier than I'm personally lucky that I have a family who's completely supportive of what I do. So we have no, I have no, except my daughter once in a while tells me, you know, I don't, today why don't you take a day off? And that's because I said, no, I can't, I have to go to office. But that's like once in a while, so that's fine. But other than that, you know, the family is completely supportive of what I do, and it's been about 4.5 years now with Ad Magnet, and so there's nothing new for them.
Any last pearls of wisdom for an aspiring entrepreneur, Ratish?
Okay, as I said, you know, very, very simply, one of the things is, you know, when you figure out what to do, just put your head down and work, and success will definitely be there. Having said that, you know, it's not just about an idea, but about a business which you think can have traction. You know, I've seen a number of people who say, you know, what I'm doing is different from the others, and that sometimes is scary to me, right? You know, because everybody wants to come and say my product is better than somebody else's product. I remember in the early days, you know, somebody asked me, how are you different from the other agency? I said, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Why don't you try me out? You know, I can tell you a number of things, but then I shouldn't be telling you how I am better. Because I'll only keep saying why I am better, right? I will not say why I am bad, and because I am in the business. So why don't you try me out and we can have to tell you. So one is, I said, you know, we need to believe in ourselves, but we should not kind of get overtaken by the hype that something happens. I mean, for example, a lot of ad tech companies have kind of come up and, you know, say, okay, I am better than this guy, and I am better than that guy. I mean, you've done a great product maybe, but do you see the scope? Do you see the scale? All that. So that's one thing I would say, you know, we should have our feet grounded to reality. At the same time, not be mundane. I mean, you should look at ways of maybe jumping and taking the next big jump, but with your feet firm, firmly grounded. So that's one. The other thing I like to tell people is never take money more than what they want. Because once you get into a comfort area, I think that's a sure shot recipe for disaster. You've got too much money, you may do things which are not what your core, what you started off by doing, and then you may just get completely off your head and you're in your comfort zone. And last but not the least, you know, completely focused on your target audience and take care of your people.
Ratish, it's been fantastic talking to a first-gen entrepreneur and somebody who's made a mark in a new emerging interactive digital marketing services space. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us, Ratish, and all the very best to you for AdMagnet and anything else.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And it was great speaking to you too.